Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show. I'm Carol Schultz, founder and CEO of Vertical Elevation, a talent equity and leadership coaching and advisory firm. We partner with founders and CEOs to create talent-centric organizations where they either don't currently exist or rebuild organizations into talent-centric cultures. We are committed to supporting your values through creating a healthy, successful company, leveraging the best talent, retention, development, and succession strategies. Listen at the end of the show for information about becoming my next guest on one of the most important podcasts for building thriving companies in about 40 minutes. Here we go. Hello, everyone. I'm here today with Gaurav Hirode. He is founder and CEO of Enablex. Gaurav, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Great. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what Enablex does at a high level?
Yeah, Enablex is a sales enablement platform. So to dig a little deeper, marketers use Enablex to organize content so that the sales reps and customer-facing team members can find the right content at the right time. So just solve the whole quintessential Google Drive and SharePoint chaos problem.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest problem that you solve for your clients?
I think improvement in sales and marketing alignment and the sales rep productivity. So make the sales rep perform faster, quicker, respond quicker to their buyers and prospects, and then get on the same page between marketing and sales teams.
Got it. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the journey to where you are today. I know you spent a number of years doing, product management, business development, and your last role that you left in 2016 after spending 8 years with Oracle was as a vice president of financial crime and compliance management. So yeah. What had you leave Oracle and go out for your first entrepreneurial experience?
So I think I've always wanted to do something like start something from scratch. I'm a product guy. I like building things. And I was sort of tired with the compliance space. So wanted to build something which was more accessible. I saw the explosion of cloud and software as a service around me. Mm-hmm. I saw that the technology was getting commoditized. So it was much easier to build products. Mm-hmm. And being a efficiency and productivity junkie and having worked with sales reps, I thought, okay, let's build a technology which will help, I would have been the user of Enablex at Oracle. If I was at Oracle, I would have been the user of Enablex trying to help the sales team with the content. So that's what the seeds were born. Like, hey, I would like to build something which I would have used effectively at Oracle. Yeah.
How large of an industry is this that you've gotten into? And are you just a small fish in a very large pond? Where do you fit in?
Yeah, so the industry is pretty large and it's rapidly growing. And especially with the last year's move to remote work and distributed mm-hmm. workspace, it's expected to grow even faster. Right now, by different sources, the industry is more than like $2.5 billion.
Okay.
And we are right now a small fish, hoping to become a big fish in the industry. Yeah.
Yeah. How would you say your background and your experience prior to founding Enablex has prepared you for what you do today?
Part of my background is technical and product oriented, as I said. So that has helped us build a really high quality product. We recognize mm-hmm. what users, especially sales users, appreciate in a product. Mm-hmm. So that has helped us, and that has translated to customer success with our customers at Enablex. Mm-hmm. Other part of it is more around selling, pricing, deal making. That has helped us. It's also been a learning experience because at Oracle, we were selling much bigger deals, it always helps to have the brand of Oracle go with you, right? And when you leave Oracle, you're sort of on your own and you are a nobody. Mm-hmm. So that's an eye-opening experience. So But even then, like, I think I credit a lot to what I learned at Oracle. Like, I think Oracle was a, for such a big company, it was a pretty fast-paced environment. Mm-hmm. And I got to learn a lot, and I have been able to apply like pricing strategy, negotiation strategy, how you can negotiate on deals with customers and prospects. So that's been valuable.
What do you think was has been the biggest challenge for you leaving such a large, well-known company and being out on your own where no one knows you?
I think the biggest challenge, as far as Enablix is concerned, the biggest challenge has been I don't come from a digital marketing background. And when you work at a company like Oracle, and the product that I was managing was an industry recognized product,
right?
You don't have to market as much. Like, you have to market, but you just have to do like the bare minimum, like trade shows and analyst mm-hmm. reports and things like that. But you don't have to like really sort of like, you don't need to get creative with it.
Right.
Let's yeah. Right. Whereas when you are a nobody, like, you know, two people working on a product trying to break into an industry, I completely miscalculated for the first couple of years, like the role of digital marketing, because I had never done digital marketing. Mm. I had never done content marketing. I had never done SEO. Mm-hmm. So I never like calibrated for that until I realized that, oh, shoot, like I'm behind the curve here and I need to catch up. So, yeah.
So did you bring in experts to do this for you, or have you just bootstrapped everything?
For the product side, like, so it's me and my co-founder. We have known each other for a long time. Mm-hmm. So the majority of the business has been built using just in-house, like our talent and our engineering team's talent. Mm-hmm. But we tried, like I have experimented trying to bring experts in, especially for, as I said, like digital marketing, that was a yep. blind spot. But I also realized that I've made many missteps in that area. So one of the experiences I learned on digital marketing is that a lot of marketing agencies that are out there, they're great at getting your car from 30 miles per hour to 40 miles per hour, mm-hmm. right? So they want an engine that is already working, and then yep. they can put fuel or pour fuel in that engine and make it go faster.
Yeah,
Sorry.
No, go ahead and finish.
No, so whereas they don't, very few agencies, in fact, I don't know of any agency which is good at taking a car from 5 miles per hour to 20 miles. So that's a different skill set.
Right.
Rather than like trying to just accelerate an already running car kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? So what did you do to, you know, you said you made a lot of missteps. So how did you go about finding someone to do this for you? And what could you have done differently in maybe interviewing them and asking better questions to help you find actually what would have subsequently been the right company to get you from, you know, zero to 40, for example?
Yeah. So I think what I could have done differently would have started internally rather than externally, right? Mm-hmm. I think I would have not been exclusively focused on product and customer success and engineering, and I could have started out with marketing.
Yeah.
I could have started out with content marketing, even if it was, let's say, 20% of my focus. Mm-hmm. If I would have started, it compounds over, mm-hmm. over months. So if I would have started out early, that content marketing investment would have helped inform me what kind of marketing partner I want to sign up on, right? Like, so I was looking in the early days of the business, I was looking for like a silver bullet, right? Hey, let me get an agency and let just like grow. And at least to my experience, that hasn't worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really great. You know, it's so important to look at the mistakes that we all make, right?
Yeah.
As entrepreneurs, and, you know, ideally to learn from those.
Yes.
Yeah. So that we don't make those mistakes again. And of course, you know, so many of our listeners are entrepreneurs. So this is really, really great to talk about the things that you've been challenged with, right? Sure. What would you say from an industry standpoint, what challenges are you and are your competitors facing in the industry or the market?
I think one of the challenges is that sales enablement as a discipline, it's still a misunderstood discipline, right? Because sales enablement means it's a very generic term. Like you could argue that Salesforce, which is a CRM tool,
right,
is a sales enablement tool because it enables sales reps to track their opportunities and accounts and contacts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we and our peers struggle with the miscategorization of what solutions qualify as sales enablement,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's still too a broader term.
Right.
The second thing is that as an industry, sales enablement has been seen as something which is only applicable for large organizations. And while that is changing, it's still not changing at the pace that we would like. So
mm-hmm.
Companies still put up with misaligned sales and marketing efforts,
mm-hmm.
content all over the place, inefficiencies, and they just want to like pretty up their website, right? Like, so the industry is still focused on like website and marketing automation and those kinds of investments. And they don't really are focused on a qualified lead that goes to the sales rep, like how best to serve a qualified lead.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing is still measured on like how many leads they get, not how many opportunities they help close. If they shift that focus, if people start measuring them on how many opportunities they are closing rather than just like how many thousand leads they got,
right,
I think sales enablement would, the discussion about sales enablement and need of proper sales enablement would be elevated in the organization.
Yeah, that's a really, really great point, Gaurav. I absolutely agree with that. So have you found that in this market that companies are trying to be all things to all people?
No, the companies are not trying to be all things to all people, which can be, but the companies are categorized, and I don't know who owns the categorization, right? Like who owns that sort of like bucketing the different technologies and different areas? Like if I say CRM, people know what I mean. If I say marketing automation, people would know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But if I say sales enablement, you would get almost like five different classes of applications. So I think so that's why when I as a buyer say I want to invest in sales enablement, okay, do I want to invest in a sales training platform? Do I want to invest in a sales content management platform? Do I want to invest in like sales engagement platform? So there are these like pillars of sales enablement, which I think could be industries of their own, right? So that's, and I think it's a good question because I wonder like what is preventing them to be their own categories rather than being sort of like put together in this generic sales enablement
mm-hmm.
category. Yeah.
So you're finding you're having to do a lot of evangelizing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot. Yeah. And evangelizing at a category level, evangelizing at a company size level. So mm-hmm. trying to educate people that, look, even though you are a 200-person organization, you are missing out if you are not enabling your sales team in a methodical and systematic fashion.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing to educate, I would say, consumers in general, or are you just focusing on your prospect base?
In fact,
on here's what this is. This is, you know, here's the difference between sales enablement and CRM, et cetera.
Yeah. So what we are doing is that we have identified like a couple of personas and then explored and found identified communities, because nowadays it's since people have gone remote,
mm-hmm.
communities are the big thing, right? Rather than meetups, because people aren't meeting or events.
Mm-hmm.
So we have identified communities and we sell to product marketers, we sell to sales enablement managers, and we are just active in those communities trying to, you know, anything from answering questions to sharing best practices.
Mm-hmm.
We are actively, and then we are spending some time on LinkedIn also in our industry space, though we find LinkedIn to be like very broad and very hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so communities, LinkedIn, social media, that's in the investment for us.
So who's your ideal prospect? Who are you going after? What size company? Who, you know, what position in the company? Who are you going after?
So we are going after companies with anywhere between 100 employees and 2,000 employees.
Okay.
And we are targeting the marketing department in that company. If you want to get more specific, product marketing department, okay. if that okay. exists. And yeah, like I think the hope is that if you are a 100-person company, you at least have like 15 sales reps, right? So, I mean, there could be outliers where you may have a 100-person company, but just have like one or two sales rep, in which case then they are not a good fit. But in most cases, the goal is to get to anywhere between 100 to, and geography wise, we are focusing on North America. So US, Canada, and then I would say UK, maybe Western Europe, but like if you were to, I were to pick three countries, it would be US, Canada, and UK.
Okay. And how many employees do you have currently?
We have 10 employees currently.
Okay. And how many are here in the States? Is it just you?
It's me, and very soon it will be one more individual who would be coming on board. So it would be two employees. Yeah.
Okay.
And then there is one in Europe and then the rest in India.
Okay. Got it. So tell me a little bit about your company culture and if there's anything particular that you would say makes it unique. And, you know, if I was one of your employees, if I came to work for you, what would I notice about your culture?
We deliberately tried to reduce number of meetings within the company. We focus a lot on written communication. I'm a big fan of asynchronous communication. We use a lot of video communication. So we use Loom, which is a video tool, a lot.
Yep. Yep.
To communicate. And a lot of stress has been put on like written communication. So let's say if you and I are talking and we decide something, that has very little meaning unless it's put in the written form in our project management tool. So what is written and what is recorded trumps what has been discussed, because what has been, I can discuss a lot. What I've realized about myself as a founder and the CEO is that ideas are coming to me at like 100 miles per hour.
Breakneck speed.
Exactly. And I used to do this earlier, and I'm sort of, so I don't mind sharing ideas. I think it's helped, like brainstorming. But just because we are brainstorming an idea, that doesn't mean that you work on that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like very clear instructions that, look, just because we are discussing something, doesn't mean it has to be done, right? We are discussing it because it's like a good sort of like venting out your emotion, like whatever is coming to you in ideas, mm-hmm. It's healthy dialogue. It tells you what I am thinking. It tells me what you are thinking from an idea perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, I used to be very like phone, like I would just pick up the phone and call and discuss these things. Now I've channeled that thing. I will write about it. We will go back and forth, but we may not do anything about it, right? Like it's just like is like exporting your energy, mm-hmm. but not necessarily like having any ramification on the long, like the impact of the product, right? Because so that's one thing. I also tell that we try to run a very calm company, or we make an effort to run a calm company. So what that means is that I don't randomly call people because I recognize that they may be in the middle of something which is like a deep work, and I may be pulling them out of deep work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use Slack or any chatting tools mm-hmm. for that matter. Not that we avoid them, but there is no expectation that if you message me on Slack that I'm supposed to respond to you.
Right.
In fact, we encourage people writing emails, so that people can respond on their own time.
Mm-hmm.
It has worked till now very well. We'll see how it works, but I like to respect people's time. I like,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know whether that answers your question, but like,
well,
that's,
I think it does, certainly in part, at least. Have you found any issues around receivers of written communications misinterpreting anything?
Yeah, sometimes. And, mm-hmm. and they are also encouraged to like over communicate in a written way. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why, because there is misinterpretation, I almost gravitate towards, I always use video first, written next. Good. So wherever I can use video, I use a video. Yeah. Even if it's that's like a hand sketch I put together, I would hand sketch it and put it or take a screenshot or put a video on it. Mm-hmm. And I think just like, I'm amazed how few organizations use video, and it's so cheap to use video, and it's so much effective than writing the words out. Because as you said, even if I'm the best writer, which I'm not, but even if I'm like the top notch writer, my words could be misconstrued.
That's right.
I think it's just the focus is we do only few meetings. We don't have to react to everything. There are only few, very few things that need you to drop everything that you are doing and pay attention to, right? Like there. Mm-hmm. So we just try to follow that mantra and just get stuff done and keep our customers happy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great that, you know, you pointing out about using video or Loom in your case, because it's really interesting. I've done a great deal of research on communication, and I'm very big about communicating and really comparing, you know, oral communication to written communication to then of course, nonverbal communication. Right.
Yeah.
And if you ask, a sender of a written communication, what percentage of people they believe are receiving the message in the spirit of how you sent it, it's somewhere north of 90%. When you ask the receiver the same question, you know, what percentage of those written communications are you interpreting the way the sender meant it? It's also over 90%. And guess what it is in reality? it's about 54%.
Okay.
Are interpreted, you know, correctly. So, 54% that are misinterpreted. Less than 50% are interpreted correctly.
Okay.
And of course, in oral communication, people will tell you also over 90% on each side. And in reality, it is, I think, like 92%, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
And so when you look at that, I mean, my assistant frequently sends me Loom videos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can't always understand, you know, English is not his first language.
Yeah.
He's Egyptian and his English is magnificent, but sometimes I get emails from him and I'm thinking, okay, what exactly did you mean by that?
Exactly.
So it's really great that you recognize that, especially if you have people that are speaking different languages.
Yeah. I think as a founder, one thing, and I have been like this, even as a manager at Oracle, mm-hmm. I recognize that a majority of my job, like, so my team is dependent on my communication, right?
Right.
So it's not just that if I mess up in my communication or if I'm inefficient in my communication, I'm doing a bad job. I'm in fact making them inefficient in turn, right? They may interpret it. So I'm big on like delegation. I'm big on communication because I think that in the end, I almost take like a lazy approach to it. Like I'm being lazy because I want them to do the most work. So I want to be less lazy on the communication side and just communicate whatever tools, whatever, like I may use mind maps. I may use whatever is like effective for from them to understand why we are doing it. Because another thing is also, I think in communication is that a lot of people tell others what to do, but they don't include why it's important to be done. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think if you give them the why, it's even though it may sound like, okay, it's obvious, but I think it changes the receptiveness to your communication.
Listen, I agree. I always say the only stupid question is the one that's not asked.
Yeah.
And, you know, better to over communicate than under communicate, because you may think that you're answering the question that someone has asked you. And I will frequently say, you know, does that answer your question? Is that what you were looking for? Or even qualify with another question to make sure I'm understanding what's being asked of me.
Yes.
And I think that's really, really important. So where do you see, Gaurav, yourself investing in the company? Any resources for growth over the next year?
Marketing and sales. So that's the two areas that we would be investing in. We may also invest in engineering talent because as we may invest in the future in customer success talent. But I think immediately we are looking at marketing and sales would be the primary areas.
Well, you learned from the master, didn't you? About the importance of marketing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oracle is a marketing machine.
Yes.
There's no question.
I learned from them, but I sort of like still committed the misstep because I just assumed that if I'm from Oracle and when I go on my own, people will just know about it. But yeah, like as you understand.
Right. And you know, the good news is you recognize that.
Yes.
Hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah. We recognized it.
Mistake.
Yeah. We recognized it. We are fixing it. And we have a path forward to make it fill those gaps and get the growth engine running.
Yeah. So if you look at your day, just like what a general day looks like for you, what do you spend most of your time doing?
So in my day is divided into customer success, right? Content, investing in content. And content could be external facing marketing content. It could be internal facing communication content, right? Sales, so just prospecting and reaching out to prospects. And in recently, recruiting. Because now, and I'm trying to now like that recruiting pie is slowly pushing the taking more space.
Yeah.
And putting strain on the other areas, but yeah, so that those would be like the four areas.
Yeah. What have you found to be your biggest challenges in learning how to recruit?
I think one of the biggest challenges is just, it's hard because there are just so many options, you know, right? Like means you could recruit on LinkedIn. There are like 100 different job board sites. So it's always like I end up like overanalyzing every channel, right? Rather than just trying out. And I haven't been recruiting for long. So I have learned that I just need to like just try out a few channels just for trying out sake and not hold back. Because I'm thinking like, oh, we are small. So maybe a job board site may not be the right option. Maybe I should look at networks. It's just like a, you know, just too many options when it comes to recruiting that has been like more challenging, like, and deciding on what channel would work best.
Right. And that's always hard, especially to a small company that doesn't have an unlimited budget.
Yes.
To do that with, you know, how do you use your money the best way? And the most effective way to get what you need, you know, and actually find the people that you want to talk to rather than what I refer to as post and pray.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So that's a challenge. So how do you spend your time when you're not working?
I do a little bit of cooking. I like cooking. Well, I don't think I like cooking, but I know that it has to be done. So I enjoy cooking just for, you know, like this thing. I spend a lot of time with my daughters. I used to be, and I'm an amateur triathlete. I used to do that, but last year has been a wash. I'm trying to get back into it. I always see like my bike buddies will say, okay, hey, we are going for a 50 mile ride on the weekend. And I'm like, 50 mile, that's too long. Let's do like a,
right.
And we cut it down. So I'm always finding ways to like sneak out of it, but hopefully I'll get into it. Yeah. I'm planning to go back to the gym and start swimming. Right. I love swimming. So yeah, those are like, it's a very, all the things that I do, like cooking,
mm-hmm.
spending time with my daughters or like, or my wife and doing the triathlon thing, they are all like, they're like a reset, like a stress mm-hmm. busters. So any one of them works.
Yeah.
That's why I think I'm not doing the triathlon thing because I think I just find that, hey, I might as well cook, right? That's less work than yeah. like running up the hill or riding my bike. Yeah.
That's really great. So, if somebody listening wanted to take the next steps with you, maybe interested in reaching out to you to potentially learn about your product or even work for you, what would you say? What should they do?
They can find us at enablix.com, enablix.com,
okay.
or they can reach out via email to me. My email address is my first name, GAURAV dot my last name, HARODE at enablix.com. So either option would.
Yeah. Okay. And if somebody were to go to your website, enablix.com, what would you suggest that they, what page should they visit first?
They just request a demo. Shouldn't it?
Okay.
No, like we write quite a bit about our approach to sales, marketing, and customer yeah. success on yeah. our about page. So that's if they are curious about sales enablement, any page is game. But if they already know sales enablement and are comparing us with other vendors, they should check our about us page. Yeah.
Good. Well, Gaurav Harode, founder and CEO of Enablix, thank you so much for being with me today. It's really been a pleasure. Carol Schultz here. Thank you so much for listening to Authentically Successful. If you are a successful founder or CEO who would like to be on this program, please visit verticalelevation.com/podcast/apply. If you learned something from this interview and it made a difference, would you please share this episode on LinkedIn? You can also do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend. And if you know somebody that would be a great guest, tag them on LinkedIn or Twitter and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Authentically Successful. I love seeing your posts and great suggestions. Lastly, we are regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any, please subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, please go to my website, verticalelevation.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.